Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi there, I'm Don Waldock from Barista Chic, and this is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.
Thank you very much, Don Waldock, for the introduction. Yes, this is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. A very, very happy Christmas from me. I'm Tim from JB.
Hello, Tim.
And from Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Here one more time in 2016 in what has been an amazing year for rugby. Just thank you very much for listening. That was the theme tune that you heard Don Waldock within, and James Mitchell tweeted us at Rugby Podcast. That's where you can find us. This is a little clip from Back to the Future, the original movie, with Marty McFly talking to his girlfriend or the woman, his love interest, back in the 1950s when he goes back, and there's a truck going round the corner saying, "Re-elect Mayor Goldie Wilson." Here we go. And that's our theme tune.
Yeah, I'm a bit annoyed, actually. I'm going to have to go back to the guy that we commissioned this theme tune off and find out exactly what's going on. Maybe it's not as unique as I originally thought.
Maybe not, maybe not. Right, well, talking Back to the Future, talking 2016, let's look back. Let's quickly whiz back in time. Favourite moments in the rugby world from 2016?
For me, I'm going to have to say the Ireland All Blacks game. That was
the Soldier Field.
Yes. The single most exciting game of rugby I've seen for a long, long time.
It was a hell of a game, wasn't it?
It really was.
And it had everything as well. It had the tries, it had the inevitable All Black comeback, but then Ireland holding off.
Yeah, that was a good bit. If Ireland just carried on scoring, carried on being dominant, it wouldn't be quite so good. But it was almost scripted. Ireland had to lose that game.
Yeah.
And for young Joey Carberry to step up and slot a few points, who, by the way, is a New Zealander.
Is he?
Yeah, he's a New Zealander.
He's born in New Zealand.
In New Zealand until pretty recently, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so there you go.
But he also had two of the best scrum halves in the world, or arguably the two best scrum halves in the world.
Well, we'll get on to Conor Murray later.
Aaron Smith and Conor Murray.
Yeah, I mean, 50 minutes since this podcast, I'm going to go into a 30-minute chat about Conor Murray.
You've been warned.
You've been warned.
You have been warned. Might be time to just go and pick over some leftovers out the fridge when that's going on. Also, because this year, it could have been, from Irish fans' point of view, their first ever win in South Africa could have been a highlight of 2016, but it was overshadowed by that win against New Zealand.
And how bad South Africa actually are when
South Africa have been getting consistently worse every game, and that was quite early in South Africa's season, so they weren't as bad then as they are now.
I would say that's the kind of yang to the ying of this. Seeing South Africa so poor is, it's not good for rugby.
No. Absolutely not.
We always talk about the kind of strengthening the tier two nations and the overall development of the game and the improvements that can bring. But you're seeing one of the consistent superpowers over the last 20 years in free fall almost.
Yeah.
Complete decline.
I'm going to throw a little highlight of 2016 there. Johnny May trying to scrummage.
Love it. I mean, it still baffles me how you are a professional rugby player. If you're a waiter and you were asked to, you know, prep a plate of food like a chef would, you might not know exactly how to do it properly, but you can still do it.
You can get something that looks broadly like it should do.
Yeah, you still work in the same premises, still watch this activity every day.
Yeah.
And Johnny May, no, nothing.
And it was the blindside flanker position. So on the left wing, he would stand looking at the blindside flanker for the last, how old is he? 27?
Yeah, something like that.
So probably for the last 15 years.
Yeah, he
of
must
his
have
life.
Seen hundreds of examples. What thousands
does he do?
Of examples.
I know. I used to play on the flank, blindside flanker, and I would know roughly where to stand as a blindside winger.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And roughly who I'm marking.
It just makes you think, what does he. You know, they talk about playing with your head up and looking what's around you. What does he look at? I mean, what must he be doing? So, bizarre.
Yeah. That is actually also one of my favourites.
It was also 2016, a year when Saracens captured a double.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And yes, Saracens captured the double, but I think a game which is sort of linked to it in a way was the England victory over Wales. Because I think that was the game where Mario Itoje really established himself.
Yeah. That Saracens double, I've just made a note of it. It was that core of English guys that won them that. People talk about Saracens buying. You know, and Steve Diamond's been very vocal trying to. His little line at the moment to the press is, oh, other teams spend double what we spend.
That is true, though.
Well,
That is true.
I don't believe it's double, but
yeah.
That's what he's trying to say. But actually, it's a core. It's Owen Farrell, Maro Itoje, Jamie George,
Cruis,
Alex
Vunipolis.
Cruz, Vunipolis.
Yeah.
So it was a double that was built on young English foundations, and it was those same young English foundations which then. You know, just afterwards, flew over to Australia and gave the Aussies a whitewash.
Yeah. So, in terms of games, the England tour to Australia, and particularly that first test match, which had just about everything, the 28-39, England won by 11 clear points, but it was only the Noel try in the last second that secured it, because until that point, it could have gone either way.
Mm.
That was a hell of a test match. And that was probably the first time that we've seen Eddie Jones's ruthless streak, because he started Burrell.
Big Luth.
Ooh. At 12. Mm. 28 minutes into the game, Big Luth, whatever Eddie Jones had seen, it wasn't what he wanted from his inside centre, and he moved Farrell across and brought Ford on.
Yeah. Yep. And actually, was it this next test he did the same thing to
Harrison?
Both of which played for Northampton, which could, you know, nicely dovetail into that situation. So yeah, you were warned, Northampton.
It was the third,
Eddie warned
you. It was
you.
The third test, and it was 31 minutes in. He pulled off, took off to Minor Harrison.
Absolutely.
Well done, Phil.
Brutal.
If he pulled off to Minor Harrison, that might be the reason why he didn't play so well.
Oh, Tim.
Well, Phil said it, not me. Right. Fiji winning gold in Rio. Where does that rank in the 2016 rugby? I'd say that's got to be right up there near the top. That was
not
an
really
amazing moment.
For me, yes.
It was okay. Not really bothered. I mean, it's sevens. Look, they're the best sevens players in the world. They've got a coach who's very good at sevens. You know, yeah, whatever.
But how often do you see massive...
Every 4 years.
Massive expectation and a team not quite delivering, but...
There is something to be said for that. The grandest stories in sport are when there is a load of expectation heaped on you and you do actually come through. So, yeah, that's a reasonable point.
And also, do you not see it as kind of like a gateway drug to the real thing? Like sevens being in the Olympics and having such an amazing story... Such a small island, their first ever Olympic medal, and to be so unbelievably dominant.
Yeah, I mean,
all the American carriers, NBC and everyone like that, have done documentaries on this now, and it's giving global promotion to rugby.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. It's the real life Jamaican bobsleigh team. So
that's our little roundup of 2016. But there's plenty to talk about that's going on in these last days. Of 2016, which we'll get into. I just want to say, if you just take a moment out of your day to leave us a review, would very much appreciate it on iTunes. You can find us on Acast as well. But Broke Neck Mountain on iTunes left a review saying, "The lads' uninhibited opinions on the latest goings-on in the world of rugby are really refreshing. It makes other podcasts in comparison look like Mauro Bergamasco playing at scrum half."
I thought that was a wonderful experiment. I'm glad I saw that.
And Velcro71 says, "This is my must-listen-to podcast of the week. Three fans of the game without the seriousness of a Stuart Lancaster lecture on culture, but with the heart and soul of Rob Baxter or Steve Diamond on a chummy night out. Definitely the biggest thing since Barista Chic's single, Espresso Schmooze."
Love that.
We have got a game that's been... you can leave a review, but if you want to go the extra mile, you will get mentions and your moment on the podcast, because I'm now inviting people to
Do our work for us?
No, not do our work for
yeah.
us. Yeah. Well, yeah, no, not do our work for us.
You want to leave me any match reviews, any funny quips, just email them over.
Yeah, get in touch. And Peter Shaw this week has come up with a game which we're going to play a little bit later. All I'll give you is the title right now. It's called Fijian Rugby Player or Medical Condition. so we're going to be playing that a little bit later. But let's get into the rugby that's been going on these past days then.
Let's do it.
Well, firstly, how was Christmas, actually? How rude.
How was Christmas? Quiet. Yeah, quiet.
But first proper one first one with a baby, right?
Yep, first one with a baby, so, you know.
But she's not going to remember. Did you bother to get her any presents?
I didn't buy her a single thing. however, she's accumulated, like, several metric tons of plastic gifts. Plastic noisy gifts. So, you know, I've not bought her a single thing, because she won't remember. But, it goes over people's heads.
So positive. So festive.
Right, that's Scrooge done. Phil, how was yours?
It was very good. A day with my parents, a day with the in-laws, a lot of wine drinking, a lot of whiskey drinking this year.
I've drank a ton of whiskey.
Yeah, I quite enjoy the wine-whiskey combination. I find I'm not really getting big
hangovers. Exactly the same. Weird.
Yeah.
All these years with hangovers. I'll tell you what I did do. I went back to my old club, Colwyn Bay, for like a dad's versus lads that aren't dad's match. And that was tremendous fun. Yeah,
proper match.
We didn't quite have 15 aside. We went 11 aside.
No, but it was like in boots on the pitch.
On boots, on the field. Great fun.
So the dads must have been, if you're playing, the dads must have been 50s, 60s kind of age.
I was playing as a dad.
Were you as a dad? Right,
you've graduated to the dads.
Yeah, you need to have a child to be on the dad's side.
So
there's a great mix.
But for some in North Wales, like, you'll have 17-year-olds on your team then, yeah?
The only criteria was you had to have a child, not you had to play against your child.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, right, sorry. Yeah.
So there could be 17-year-olds on the dad's team.
Yeah, loads.
It's a bit cruel to make your less than 1-year-old lace up and get out.
I heard a tremendous story when I was at Colwyn Bay, and I'm thinking about it now. Should I tell this? No, I can't, because it was so harsh. I shan't.
Can you say it without giving away any important info?
One of the lads, a week before the game, might have been caught by his significant other forget it, it doesn't matter. I can't really say it without giving too much away, but it is brutal. Okay, should we talk about some rugby?
How was your Christmas, Tim?
My Christmas, I had one at home, like the first time going solo on Christmas dinner. I absolutely nailed it.
Good.
And, completely nailed it.
It's a lot of pressure.
Well, it is, but there's a lot of get ahead. Like I did my spuds the day before, parboiled them, put them in the freezer. And put them straight into the goose fat from the freezer.
Clever.
That's like a Heston Blumenthal triple cooked chips kind of thing.
It works a treat. So
clever.
Kieran John had a good Christmas. He's tweeted us at Rugby Podcast. He said, "Mum heard me talking about the Quinn stash after you boys mentioned it. She only went and got it for me for Crimbo." And there's a picture of him wearing his beautiful Quinn stash.
What a lovely mother.
That's a good point, actually. The Quinn stash in yesterday's game, I loved that. The All Black special kit.
Well, dark grey, wasn't it?
Yeah, black, dark grey. Yeah. Really, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, big gay 9.
Yeah, I was disappointed it's not big game 8 anymore, because it just sounded like that. I don't think anyone spotted that last year, that it just sounded like they were saying...
Oh, I think they did. That's big, it's a big game 9.
Gay mate. So, it's been going for years. They did big game 10 a couple of years ago.
Well, no, is it not? Because this was game week 11. So,
good question.
I think
this is the ninth year done a big game.
It just so happened that last week was week eight.
Was the eighth? Well, last year, so it might have been.
It was on
week...
round 8 of the thing, so it fooled us.
There we go.
It's a big game 9, but big game 8 will always be our favourite.
Shall we talk about some games? Shall we talk? I know you don't want to talk about Sale, but let's talk about Sale. I'll tell you why I want to talk about Sale, because I was actually at the Sale press day on Tuesday, which was a fascinating insight to how they work. And now, the one thing which got me, and you two can probably tell me if I'm wrong or right, or if this is surprising or not, is the intensity that these guys train at. Like, to hit the scrimmage, like, just hitting the scrim machine over and over again, you'd have thought that their life depended on pushing that scrim machine back. I was amazed by just how vocal everyone is.
You play like... train like you play like you train.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of short and sharp, so very short but very high intensity, like match intensity for a condensed
period. There's nothing worse than those coaches that would say, right, we're just going to do a quick 45-minute session, and you'd be there an hour and a half later.
And also we're going to do it at 60% or 50% or 70%, like a specified not 100%. But that means that everyone's kind of subjective on where that percentage is.
We had a coach at one of my former clubs, and his speciality was saying the amount of contact you could have, so about 60% contact, okay, but then he'd specify the amount of contact in the tackle. So it'd be 50% contact with a 60% tackle. Do the maths on that. What does that mean? So, like 100% contact with a 50% tackle, I think.
You can hit half hard, but then you can grab and pull him down to the ground a little bit harder.
The initial impact, dial it back a bit, but then go increase it.
Well, apparently, what is starting to happen more and more at Aviva Premiership clubs is that they are pulling back on the full contact sessions in training.
Same with the NFL. Yeah. But I'll just tell you a few interesting takeaways. So a little bit of interesting trivia. Apparently, Alex Ferguson goes down and stands on the balcony with Steve Diamond. So that was a big shock to me.
He lives nearby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves to go and watch sports. So
the Carrington training ground is around the corner.
Yeah.
The Man United training ground, that is.
The other takeaway is related to the fact that you were mentioning contact then. They just don't have enough time. The coaches were talking about it. They don't have enough time to implement the new changes. And if they are going to dial back on contact, they're going to have even less time to implement the new changes. They think they need something like 3 weeks to 3 months in order to change habits.
When you say the new changes, the law changes.
Yeah.
Law changes.
So I think it was pointed out in commentary in Big Game 9 that players appeared to be hitting lower more often.
Yeah, well, they've got to, haven't they?
So it's a coaching point. He's coming through.
Yep.
That is a coaching point. But back to the point we made a couple of weeks ago, I don't want to go into this in any detail.
No.
There are scenarios, particularly when you're on your own line, where it will be very difficult to go low in a defensive tackle because you need to make a dominant tackle that wraps up the ball.
Mm.
And it's going to be an absolute minefield when they start officiating that.
Mm. But Sale didn't get the result that they wanted on Friday. In fact, far from it.
Yeah, quite a long way from the result and quite a long way from the performance they wanted.
See, I disagree with that. I disagree with the performance side. So
I don't.
Their pack are doing sterling work. I mean, their pack is absolutely fine.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're absolutely fine. Line out scrum, decent. Ball carrying, decent. Clearing out, decent. Mm. And if you don't believe me, look at the stats. You know, they've had the ball, go through the second most phases in the entire Prem. The problem lies with those halfbacks. I mean, they are simply not up to it.
The fact that AJ McGinty looked a better scrum half than Mike Phillips.
Yes, I completely agree. Completely agree. I wonder if that might be the future for him.
Sam James 10, AJ McGinty scrum half.
Yeah.
Move them all in one.
Well, hear me now, believe me later. Sam James will be the starting 10 next week. I don't think there's any debate in that.
I'd be very surprised if it's anything other than that. They've just had no direction.
Yeah, how can McGinty go from winning the Pro 12 and looking very good and being the apple of Pat Lam's eye to in a slightly different team, slightly different setup, but it's not that different.
Well, I'm interested in this because we were just chatting before the podcast and we were talking about what we're going to talk about, and I was working at the Worcester game and I just said they look rudderless, and I said, oh, that just seems like the players, not so much the coaching. They just didn't seem to do the basics, and you said, oh no, that is coaching. So with Sale, is that coaching? Because that would...
No, it's not, because...
not with Sale, Tim.
Not with Sale, not with Dimes, not
with
my Dimes.
With Worcester, yes.
Because, you know, the coaching things, like, they know the calls. I mean, AJ McGinty knows the calls, but he just can't take the ball to the line. Mike Phillips knows that he needs to move the ball quickly, but he's just not doing it. I mean, all the calls are there, all the patterns in the backs are there. Everything's set up nicely for Sale to be a very good team, but the halfbacks just are not doing the business. And they can't go to Mugford because he either isn't fit or isn't up to it. McGinty cannot move that team one bit. But when it goes to those wingers, I mean, those rugby league wingers have got are quite something. That Solomona try was spectacular.
I think so. There's a massive number. I was looking on YouTube at some of his tries in rugby league. It's amazing how many of his tries were exactly that.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just, what a weird skill.
Yeah.
Did you see the other finish that was almost identical to that this week?
Was it Zeebo?
Zeebo,
yeah.
It was carbon copy of it. Both incredible finishes.
So, on the flip side, Northampton got themselves a a win at home, and they had a lock in the changing room apparently afterwards. Some good
in a good way.
Pre Christmas team bonding.
Good.
All the sort of academy players that have been training with the first team got a little message on the WhatsApp group, right, get in here, and they had a lock in. And all the players had a few bevvies. That's the kind of thing that Northampton need to do.
Yeah,
they need
some
that.
Unity.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what if they'd have lost though? I mean, that the most disappointing thing for a Sale point of view is they could have won that game easily. I mean, Northampton were not good; just Sale were worse.
Well, that's just yeah. how bad Sale are.
Yeah, neither team are great, and Northampton won't take a huge amount out of it. Yes, they've got the win, but it wasn't an especially brilliant performance, and they only got three tries, and the last one of them was in the 81st minute.
Sale are in danger of being reeled into a relegation battle.
Agreed. And not only that.
Yeah, 100%.
I think Bristol might take them. I've just got this funny feeling. I mean, Bristol looked very, in patches, very powerful with 14 men against Worcester.
Sale at home and Bristol on the road, I see things slightly differently. Anyway, let's move on then, because the next game was at the other end of the table.
Yeah.
At Wasps versus Bath.
Second versus third.
And this is... I mean, the Northampton Sale game was tense in one sense. There was a lot on the line for the coaches and for the teams in the context of their whole season, but not really a lot on the line besides that. This Wasps Bath game was a big statement of where these teams are going through the halfway mark.
Yeah, and so I think this was a brilliant game for the neutral, a brilliant game as for a Wasps fan. But if you're a Bath fan, you'd just be frustrated because they were right in this game up to half time. And then second half, mistakes and compounding mistakes by giving penalties away, missed tackles. And Wasp, if you make a mistake, that back line is so clinical. They've got the pace, they've got the playmakers, they've got playmakers with pace, and they finished off brilliantly every little opportunity that Bath gave them.
Do you think there's any England repercussions from this game?
Are you talking about Christian Wade?
Christian Wade was well. Also, the matchups like there's Elliot Daly versus
Joseph.
There's Launchbury versus Atwood.
Yeah,
you know, there's quite a few head-to-heads here. Cipriani versus Ford. I don't think anything's going to change there.
No.
But it's interesting.
It is the one that could change is Daly Joseph. I don't think it will do just because of Joseph's defence is a little bit better than Daly's. But Daly, you saw how dangerous he can be with half a yard.
Mm.
And Christian Wade is the big one. He's for the past few years, he's repeatedly been called, or certain individuals have repeatedly called for him to be wearing an England shirt.
Do you know what record he broke in that game?
Most tries before Christmas.
Most tries in a calendar year.
Is that right?
18, and he's still got another game to go on Friday.
In calendar year. Oh, yeah, because Wasps also had undefeated season, didn't they, in their calendar year?
Can I show you the reason why I think there's a couple of Wasps players that maybe aren't in the England squad?
Oh, yeah.
Right, I saw this.
This try celebration, Danny Cipriani and Christian Wade.
Do you know what? It's just childish, isn't it? They're grown men. What is that? I mean, you see small girls doing it in playgrounds. Oh, we're so cool. Look how cool we are.
I asked him in the Man of the Match interview whether there was a name for it. And he said, oh, no, there wasn't. But who was it he said? He said, oh, but Matty Mullen said, you've got to do the dolphin again next time you score. So maybe that's what it's called. So it's now called, that is the dolphin.
The dolphin.
There's the ash splash.
It's so...
Now there's Christian Wade's dolphin.
It's so juvenile.
He scored a hat-trick. Well, that might have been his second try.
Yeah.
But
it is juvenile. It's so ridiculous.
Let the boys play, Jay. Let the boys play.
Oh, that's something I found. I really dislike that.
It's a little bit like if you're going to do celebrations like that on your... It might have even been his first try, actually. If you're going to do celebrations like that, you've got to back it up with an amazing performance, which he did.
Yep.
It's like back when coloured boots were quite rare. If you dared to wear coloured boots, you had to play incredibly well.
I heard a story. I'm not sure how true this is. I heard a story. Do you know, like one of those rugby myths that gets passed around, that Pat Howard hated Vondell's white boots so much that he sent him to Bedford for a season? I'd love to know if that's actually true.
But you were a forward who went with pink boots.
Yeah, I did.
When coloured boots were quite quite a new thing.
Unstoppable.
You had to, you had to back that up with performances. Otherwise, you just look like an absolute loser. It's a little bit like that with Christian Wade. He backed it up with a hat trick.
Exactly. I'm just like Christian Wade.
On the flip side, Ben Teo came out with some very public comments, which maybe his director of rugby wouldn't have liked, saying, I didn't sign up for this. I thought we were going to be moving up towards eventually challenging for titles in the top four.
Ben Teo is a bit of an idiot. Okay, so first of all, completely disrespectful to your club, and not exactly what his teammates want to be hearing. Second of all, he's a rugby player. He's a rugby player with ambitions to play for England. That's why he moved over. He's got a choice of 12 potential employers, and he didn't do the research.
I mean, he did the research, but that was the highest offer on the table.
Yeah.
So he's gone for money rather than a better opportunity, challenging for the title.
I find this staggering that he's got the face to... just the sheer nerve to even say it. He knew exactly what was going on. It's not like he showed up in a brand new city and, you know, went down to Hayes or Reed or something and just applied for one of the many hundreds of jobs. He's got 12 employers and he couldn't work out which one is which.
Which one is going to be a challenger for the top four?
The man's an idiot. He's an outright idiot. And furthermore, whilst we're on the subject of Ben Teo, he was completely and utterly outplayed by Hurrell. I put out a tweet that if you didn't know who these players were and you had to identify the hard-running English centre, which one would it be, Ben Teo or Will Hurrell?
Ben Teo did look good as a ball carrier.
Not as good as Will Hurrell.
What I think Ben Teo showed briefly in glimpses in that game that England can benefit from is his yards after contact. He makes contact and still manages to make 5 to 10 meters after contact. It's pretty amazing. And for a gain line battle, that's where he comes in.
You're talking
handy.
About Teo or Hurrell here?
For Teo. Well, Hurrell had a great game for Bristol.
Yeah. Hurrell does it every... He continually does it.
No, he had a really good game. Don't get me wrong. What I'm saying is, going back, because I know we've sort of looped around to a different game, but Christian Wade, stupid celebration, backed it up. Ben Teo... questionable comments, which Carl Hogg in the pre-match interview when I asked him about them said he'd been misquoted, but it had quotation marks around it. So I don't know what to make of that. But
send him packing.
But he didn't back it up with a big performance, which his side needed.
I'm not sure he's had a single big performance in a Worcester shirt yet. I mean,
he's had some good performances this season.
Well, he missed the start of the season.
He's only played four.
We've not seen him much you've probably seen him more in England shirts.
He's looked good. When he's played.
He has looked good when he's played. But he needs to be... England internationals in teams like that need to be lifting their whole team and converting the near misses and the tight games into wins, which clearly he hasn't been doing this season.
Yeah, I don't actually think he's a particularly bad player. I just don't think he's shone against Bristol. And I think he should shut his mouth until he starts playing really well.
I think he should recognise the situation he's in. And there's ways to earn a move. And if that's what you want, and it's playing well, lifting, as Phil just said, being the big player, being the big influencer, and being the England international, coming back to your club and lifting the performance of the team. Look at Francois Houhard, what he did for Worcester last year.
Well, okay, let's talk.
Every other club in the league would have taken Francois Houhard if he was available.
Well, one of these wonderful hypotheticals then. Which team in the Premiership would most benefit from Ben Teo, or where would he fit in?
With comments like that, certainly not someone like Exeter. Because Rob Baxter talks about being one of the boys.
He does a massive amount of research on the character of a player.
Exactly.
I wonder, like, if he's this desperate for the England shirt, which I think is what has happened, I wonder how many clubs turned him down, knowing that he might be a bit this way. Or if any.
I think pretty much, as a player, I think Harlequins, it would be an upgrade on Jamie Roberts.
Yep, maybe.
As he is now. I think Sale could benefit from him. I think Newcastle would benefit. I think Leicester, they've got options there, but none of them have played or been fit.
Tuilagi, they don't really need him.
So maybe Leicester don't need him.
Sale might not be a bad move, because he's very much the Leota Tuitupu.
I think he's a wonderful player. I mean, if he comes to Sale, he'd be...
Are you actually a Sale fan now, Jamie?
Just see what reaction I'd get.
With you in Sale, it's almost like... Stockholm Syndrome or something like that.
It's just because they're local. If we lived in the Midlands, I'd be and I had access to those teams, we'd be talking only about them.
on our little fantasy league WhatsApp group, I made a comment which I think has absolutely nailed it. Where, you know, farmers are very good at not building up personal relationships with animals. Don't give them names and stuff because they're just livestock. JB has got too close to sale.
Yeah.
And now he can't rip them to shreds when they deserve it. Now he's just got too close. He can't send sale to the abattoir after a dreadful performance. He got too close. Right, so Wasps, the real deal. The real deal.
Yeah, Wasps were very good. Bath will be frustrated. And then the Bristol-Worcester game, because we touched on it, I just want to link that to the Wasps game, because Bristol-Varndell got a hat-trick.
Oh.
Wade also got a hat-trick. Varndell is now one off the Premiership all-time top try scorer record. He's 89. And Cueto is 90. But Christian Wade, so of the all-time top players, top try scorers, there are three still playing. Wade, Varndell, and the other one is?
Ashton.
Correct.
Ah, well then.
Because Steve Hanley's third.
Steve Hanley is third. Ashton's fourth on 72. But if we are correct in what we believe, Ashton may not be long.
Oh, he is off, isn't he? He's signed for too long.
Yeah.
No
player can talk to any club till January the 1st, JB.
We'll
know this.
Yeah.
I guess Dimes will be sitting down with Ford in a few days' time now?
He won't have had any contact with him before.
It'd be immoral.
Yeah. And so Varndell is going to take it. But Varndell has probably got, at best, a couple of years left scoring tries in the Premiership. Oh, and that is conditional on Bristol staying up, really.
Yeah, but you look at him yesterday. I mean, whoever comes up next should take him.
Oh, yeah.
He looked... I can honestly say, I don't think I've seen Varndell have many good games. He doesn't seem to shine. Yesterday, he was class.
He's such a finisher.
He really is, yeah.
If you look at... There's a really, really good Tom Varndell highlight reel on YouTube, which is just him finishing tries. Some incredible ones.
He's taller than me as well.
He's 6'4".
He must be 6'3 or 6'4".
Yeah, he's quite a large fella.
Yeah. It's a big slice.
So he's 31, 32 at the start of next season. So
got plenty of time because he's still got that speed. That's all that matters, really.
So you'd say he's got a good couple of years left, but Christian Wade is on 59. So he's 30 behind Varndell, but he's 6 years younger.
Mm.
And he's got 18 this calendar year. So on that basis, it'll be three and a half years.
Well, looking at the last 4 years... we've got data from him because he missed a season, but he scored 12 tries, 13 tries, 9 tries. So if you say in a season he's averaging kind of 12 tries, then if he gets another 6 years, you're on 70-odd tries on top of his 59 already. So he could completely blow it out of the water.
Yeah, the only problem with Christian Wade is he's feast or famine.
He didn't score for 7 games before this one.
Exactly. So not
before that, he scored 6 against Worcester.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
last season,
kind of like the Patrick Clivert of rugby.
Yeah.
Well, really, that's not true because he scored 3 against Bath. So, you know, fair play to him.
Yeah. Go on, Bristol Worcester then.
Yeah. I mean, now what a mess.
12 minutes in, PC red card. Are we all?
Yeah. Fine.
Fine. According to the laws as they are, not getting into debating the laws, according to the laws as they are,
red.
Everyone understands it. It's pretty clear cut. I quite liked, we got a lot of reaction on Twitter saying, as soon as the red card happened, there's another game ruined. This is terrible. Red card's ruining the game.
Mm.
And it didn't at all.
No.
It had the opposite effect. And there was actually a really good article, I think it was last weekend in the rugby paper, that highlighted 6 games in the past year where there've been red cards and the team with the red card won, including
Munster against Glasgow.
Munster against Glasgow, including England against Argentina,
including Ireland South Africa
and the top 14 final, Racing Toulon, where Machinode got red card in the first few minutes. So it kind of highlights a couple of things. One is that it's not as big a loss as you might think, because you're losing one player, And all of these teams now practice to be a man down. So you know exactly how you're going to set up your scrum defensively and offensively.
You don't even know which man it is. I mean, I think that's the one that's confused everyone.
But one man down, you can react if it's an outside back. Everyone can fill in.
Yeah,
if
you know,
it's a flanker.
Like for example, you know when it's when you're a man down, and the man down's in the back line. We even used to do this at like low level club rugby. It's like when you're a man down and there's in the backs from a scrum. The scrum half doesn't walk around with his scrum half. He stands off as first receiver, and seven has ten, and you all.
Which makes you think, why don't they do that anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's so many things like why don't you play better anyway?
So yeah,
good coaching suggestion there. Right,
play JB, better, guys.
Dimes says I'm stepping back on this one, boys. JB's here. Just play better, boys.
Okay,
all right. See you later.
Okay, boss.
But it also shows something that we kind of said for a while, which is the All Blacks and Saracens as the best examples. They outscore their opposition when they're a man down. Which they always outscore their on average. Mm. They always outscore their opposition, but they continue to do so with a man down. So
whereas Wales had a phase, I think, with a man down, they'd ship 14 points.
Well, that's kind of the historical. We always used to get told if you're a man down, it should be two tries. Like in that 10-minute period when you're a man down.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's
tries, but it's definitely not that anymore because teams and defences are a lot smarter than they used to be.
You know, I just thought this whole performance, because of the red card, it made the performance even more remarkable. I mean, how hard must it be if you're losing every game and you're losing significantly? You've lost your coach. Mark Tainton has come in. You know, credit where it's due. I mean, he's done a hell of a job to get this win because that group mustn't have had much belief anyway. To be a man down and still believe that you can get the victory and get the victory is pretty heroic.
It is. It's a great result, great performance. And that, getting that result in the face of adversity will give an even bigger lift to Bristol. And they will say, look, anything is possible now.
Yeah.
The confidence boost is huge.
It is. I just going back to the red card, there was, as you said, a bunch of messages to @rugbypodcast on Twitter and people go, oh, I can't wait to hear Tim have a rant.
Yeah.
Like, unfortunately, I'm not going to have a rant about this one.
However,
I'm going to say that by the letter of the law, that is a red card. You know, and it's a coaching point for players, blah, 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 as we talked about many, many times. I'm not going to go into that. I will say that World Rugby are doing everything they can to protect the jumper. And I do think that they've, with a lot of these law variations, changes that they're bringing in, they've maybe skewed stuff a little bit too one way. And hopefully JB's point that things will right itself, it will come back. I hope it does. But the one comment I seem to hear coming from directors of rugby, coaches, players and stuff is they haven't asked us. They've bypassed the players. And so in that way, I'm going to use that word. Maybe World Rugby aren't showing quite enough empathy.
Yeah, who cares?
You need to do that is actually just consult with players and coaches and say, how do you think we should?
Yeah,
we should
and tell them. Tell them
that's a very good point.
And tell them when the changes are due next season.
Yeah, and we'll say, okay, cool.
Give them a 3-month window to prepare for it. Over the
as summer. We talked about on last week's podcast, they are terrified of a class action lawsuit costing hundreds of millions of pounds, and they just want to be shown that they're doing everything in their power to avoid because it's going to come.
More importantly, Worcester's lineouts.
Yeah. Oh my word!
Incredible, incredible scenes.
They need Niall Annett back big time. Jabba Bregvadze, he had a horrible day.
But
in
like. This is what they practice every day. I mean, I think I'm right in saying almost every day they'll do their set piece, their line out, their scrums.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it was that guy's fault. At one point, they didn't even get a man in the air. I mean, you understand if he overthrows it, that's on the hooker. But if your second rows aren't getting in the air or your back rows aren't getting in the air, ridiculous. I mean, and that's why bad teams are bad. I mean, for Worcester to be in the situation they are and not know their set piece is quite remarkable.
Well, and not know that, I'll tell you what, why don't we've got an extra man on them in the backs. Why don't we find the space that will be in the backfield and just play a bit of territory?
Yeah.
How they didn't think on, I know they lost their 10.
They lost Shilcock early on,
as a result, and they don't have a 10. That is the point. Go back to Sale. They don't have
apparently they've got Ryan Lamb there on. Huge money.
Yeah.
Huge. Like, one of the best paid fly-offs in the entire league is Ryan Lamb.
There's clearly some things that are wrong. Again, another interesting element. I mean, I know the second row that came in for him, Christian Scotland-Williamson, had a good game, but Donnacroke Callaghan, bearing in mind he's 37, his family back in Cork or Limerick, one of the two, he was a travelling reserve, wasn't allowed to go home for Christmas, didn't play.
Ooh.
So you kind of wonder, I don't know, and it's pure speculation, but you kind of wonder, is there some unrest with some of these senior guys. You put that together with Ryan Lamb not being involved.
And they didn't start Dowson either.
Dowson didn't start, but he came off the bench.
Dowson's an important player for every team he's ever played for. He's a good leader.
Great leader.
That's kind of why you have him in the side, I guess.
Yeah, and if your line-out's not going right, Donal Kirk-Callaghan, he knows a thing or two about line-outs, doesn't he?
He certainly does, yeah.
So,
and he's playing well at the start of the season. I don't know. I've not watched enough Worcester to say, or Donal Kirk-Callaghan specifically to say, if that was the right move or not.
But can I just briefly, we're not getting into a conversation with it. I'm trying to be proactive in terms of the high ball catches. Would it, because one thing that's happening is the Saracens model, which Gloucester are now employing, which Bath are now employing, which all the teams that seem to be doing better are playing territory and doing this up and under kick, trying to squeeze territory and a lot more kicking. Would a fair catch thing from rugby, where
like the mark?
Like a mark, would that disincentivise these high kicks and play? Let the boys play a little bit more.
No.
So for example, and it would stop it, rather than penalising and red and yellow carding. Actually, just trying to stop this up and unders, because all they actually gain is 20 metres in territory, and that's the reason why these people are getting injured and going over on their necks. It's not the like in Tusi Piece's case. I don't think he could particularly help it. And he was in a position to compete for the ball. So all I'm saying is, so in NFL, they have a fair catch where if there's a punt,
they wave it off and they say, oh,
the receiver says, I'm not going to bother running this back, I'm just going to catch and mark it. If players did the same thing in rugby and they could just get a scrum from an up and under court, then it would, I think, quickly, overnight, you would stop these up and unders being such a thing.
You would stop the up and unders. However, the reason a lot of those up and unders are put in place is because you're trying to get territory, but you're also trying to create broken field. So if you can catch the ball 20 yards further down and you've got a broken field ahead of you, it's a great attacking opportunity.
And
you,
not only
you
that,
automatically stop that broken field attacking.
I know what you're saying. I actually don't think that's what it is. If you look at Saracens' possession statistics, they like, and Bath now the same, they like the opposition to have the ball more than they have it.
Completely
agree
with
that. But as soon as they get that turnover, but as soon as they get that turnover or this broken field opportunity, they go, and that's when they use the hands.
Having said that, they also say that Saracens don't like the opposition having the ball for more than six phases, which is quite interesting too.
Because they think they tire out.
Yeah.
Yeah, defence is tired. That's what they focus on. When they do get the ball, if we can keep the ball for more than six phases, they'll be spaces.
Kicking. The broken field stuff is, you are exactly right. If you regather the ball and you're in broken field, brilliant.
Yeah.
But the other thing I think is very important about the kicking game is you're incentivising the defensive team to get men out of their line, shortening their line, because they've got to have two or three
back
deep,
in the pocket.
Deeper.
Yeah.
And that's when you play. Hole. But maybe with the athleticism of the guys now, it's not really a big deal if you need to.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, the game wasn't ruined, as you pointed out, by red card, but it could have been, and we've seen lots of other games that have been.
In fact, it's enhanced.
Have been spoiled.
Yeah, it was a better game,
spoiled because of, and we don't know how it's going to be officiated after January the 1st, but it could be that we see even more red and yellow cards. And if that is the case, more games could be spoiled. And so I'm trying to say, let's try and prevent that scenario from happening where red and yellow cards could happen. So anyway.
Do you know where this leaves Worcester and Bristol in the table? I mean, presumably in the same position, but with the
Bristol 2 points behind.
Exactly that.
Wow.
And then Worcester are 8 points adrift of Sale, who are third from bottom now.
Ooh.
And their next two fixtures are a lot of the clubs towards the bottom have got winnable games in this little 3-game winter block. So Gloucester would have wanted to have beaten Quinns. They've now got teams around them, Northampton and Northampton and Sale, perhaps. Anyway, but it's the same. Worcester have got winnable games in the Premiership. Let me just have a look at their New Year's. So these.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Three games they would have been targeting big time. So Worcester have got Quins at home on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And Worcester have got Gloucester away on the first weekend in January.
Yeah.
And
then they don't play again until February.
And Bristol have got Sail away. And Newcastle, Sail have got Newcastle at home, and Bristol have got Harlequins at home.
Mm.
So winnable games in the next.
I think
rounds.
Bristol will take Harlequins. I mean, they were very close in Wembley. So yeah, that give me that.
Should we touch on the other?
Yeah, because I want to talk about the Pro 12, of course.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's wrap up the Premiership.
Okay.
We'll let the game that our listener Peter Shaw has come up with be the little interlude between that and Pro 12 and JB's rant.
It's not going to be a rant. I'm going to talk
passionate moment. I'm not knocking it. I like it.
I'm going to
talk. Passion's what we want, JB.
I'm going to talk in depth about the Pro 12 and the joys of watching the Pro 12.
Can we just rewind and hear that sentence again? JB just said, "I'm going to talk in depth about the Pro 12.
Yep.
That's a beautiful thing for Welsh, Irish and Scottish fans. Unless, Phil, you know what he's going to talk about.
I've got a feeling. Anyway, Quins Gloucester, yesterday's game. Did anyone see this live?
I did. Well, I didn't see it live, but I watched the whole game.
Bits of it. I mean, two teams which don't really inspire me in the Premiership.
Terrible first half. Let's move past that.
The first half was awful.
Absolutely dreadful.
Awful.
About 30 scrums and lineouts.
Sounds all right.
It was just scrum penalty. Penalty from Rolly Moore, knock on. That was the only three actions. Joe Marchant did score a nice try.
By the way, I've looked at Joe Marchant's highlight videos as an England youth. Bloody amazing.
Yeah.
He scored a couple of good tries.
God, he's good.
He did.
I didn't have him in my fantasy team, though.
And yeah, oh well.
Second half was much better. After 26 seconds, Clifford, who was another player. And I mean, the young Quins guys and the England Quins guys, Clifford, Marchant, Brown and Marler, they were all exceptional. They really stood out. But it was a good game and Gloucester came back into it in the last 10 minutes and Quins, with a little bit of drama where Danny Kerr collects the ball in the 81st minute because of a knock-on, goes to kick it into touch, doesn't find touch, finds Johnny May, who starts running it back.
Oh, yes!
But Johnny May, unfortunately, was crabbing from one wing to the other looking for a gap and just didn't find one and ended up running into touch.
Johnny May is a bizarre character, isn't he? He must be so incredible at what he does to allow for these complete mental lapses. Nobody runs from one side of the field to the other.
If I was picking a team of 2016, if I was picking a Lions team based on the autumn internationals, Johnny May's in for me.
He'd be in the squad.
If you were only picking a Lions team from what you saw in the autumn internationals, I'd give Johnny May the left wing starting shirt.
Do you not think he's a complete one? I mean, it's a hell of a trick that he pulls off, but a bit of a one trick pony.
No, I think his defence. What really impressed me in the autumn is the defensive work he put in.
He was under the high ball as well. He's got better.
He just strikes as the kind of character. We mentioned the scrimmaging before. We mentioned him moving from one wing to another, like crabbing across. He's like one mental lapse away from complete catastrophe at any single moment.
It does make it more exciting, though, doesn't
it? Yeah, and I think this is why he scores amazing tries, because he should have passed the ball. Most people would have passed the ball at that point, but he just carries on running.
Well, Mike Brown made an incredible tackle on him. He broke through, juggled with the ball, broke through, and got into his stride, coming up to the 22, and goes to go outside Mike Brown, and Mike Brown scythed him down. It was a hell of a tackle to stop a certain try. Both teams had good moments, but both teams had far more bad moments than they had good moments in this game, which is probably the story of their season so far, I think. So we didn't learn anything particularly new from this game from either side.
And last is Leicester-Exeter.
Which was...
Rob Baxter said the scoreline doesn't reflect how close the match were. Exeter got some late points, but that said... really comfortable. Well, for what you would, what we would have expected, a comfortable win.
Yeah.
Well,
Leicester away.
I think I know all about Leicester now. I think I can. Do you want me to explain Leicester?
Go on.
All right. So, good in the scrimmage, would you say? I mean, traditionally, very good.
But they're spending a lot, as we've talked about many times. They're spending a lot of money now on people that aren't doing the business in the front row. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
But you know, they still have a bit of pride. Good at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being pretty good at home, right? Yeah. Beat Munster, beat Racing.
Yeah.
I think I know what. They're basically a French team. they go away, they don't care, they get smashed everywhere. I mean, the scoreline doesn't reflect it, but it's still a beatdown. 30 points to 10 is a beatdown.
Yeah, they've conceded over 100 points in the last three away games.
Yeah, they get hammered at
Glasgow.
Hammered at Munster.
Yeah. Yeah, Leicester are basically the new 1997 to lose team.
I do love when you were talking to Gavin Mortimer on the Rugby Dungeon when he said there was a French prop who, in away matches, didn't even bother tying up his bootlaces.
No, that wasn't from me. That was from Flats and Shanks. Oh, but I retold the story.
Did you retell?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they well, no, but there are French teams where it's standard that they don't pick their big names for away games. That's just the standard.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's even written in some people's contracts. They only play home games.
Like when Jason Robinson filed.
Yeah, we'll
what a teammate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right with you, lads.
Enjoy Red Roof, boys. I'll be here when you get back.
Yeah, well, that puts Exeter in top four, which is very interesting because they had such a rubbish start.
They really did.
Yeah.
And they, yeah.
But the teams behind them, so after Exeter, you've got Leicester, Quins, Northampton, Gloucester. None of who, they're all so up and down.
Mm.
So hit and miss. Whereas the top four, Exeter, since their poor start, have got some consistency. Bath have certainly got consistency.
Not only that, Exeter play Saracens. A very kind of predictable brand of rugby. You know what they're going to do in the 22. You just know what they're going to do, and that they're going to be organised and they're going to be prepared. I think they will continue a nice steady. Three wins, one loss.
I think
all the way maybe to the playoffs.
Look at the table now, and I think it pretty much tells you. Well, yeah, it's a really good indication of what we've seen. So Saracens and Wasps are the two best teams.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bath not far behind. Exeter and Leicester creeping up, and it'll be probably, you think, Exeter or Leicester into the top four, along with those three. Mid-table, kind of Harlequins down to Sale, all kind of fighting each other, but Sale are at a pretty crucial point in their season where they could be dragged down or they could start looking up.
Because their recent form has been worse than their starting.
Awful. Really and awful. And there's only so many times that Sale can use, because up till now it was, we haven't had the results, but we've been playing Toulon and we've been playing Saracens. There's only so many times you can use that excuse, and there's only so many times you can say we're spending half as much as other teams.
But they are spending half as much as other teams.
Well, but that was never. But it's just interesting
that
seems to be a line that is coming out.
Do you want to hear
now?
This is in the last couple of weeks. No, they did.
When things are going,
they absolutely did. And not only did they, I will.
Let's not talk any more about Sale.
I've got one more fact for you. This is astounding.
Okay, go on.
Sale will be only the fourth club in the league to be profitable at the end of the year.
I don't believe that.
That's why it's astounding.
I believe it.
They will break even.
Because they don't own their own ground.
They will break even and they this never, year.
That is some very, very good accountants. Look at it. They're paying rent on their stadium. They're not getting the money for drink and food at the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they were, it was only 3,000 people anyway.
Well, I'm telling you now.
Their gate receipts must be negligible.
TV money?
The TV money is the big thing.
Yeah,
the TV money doesn't cover...
They spend their money very wisely. You can't deny that.
If they are profitable...
Amazing.
And they haven't... Then I'd say you can't use we're spending less as an excuse.
That makes no sense, Tim.
Because you're not investing the money you have in assets. It's like complaining about a headache but not taking an ibuprofen or
it's
a paracetamol
like, no. It's like what's
you're not allowed to complain about it until you've done something about it.
A vast amount more than they're making. It's like, what was it, £16 million loss? Bath run at a loss. Saracens run at a loss. I mean, they're all running.
Sale are going to be running at a loss if they aren't ready.
They are going to be breaking even.
They are going to be. No, it will.
It'll be interesting to see.
They will break even.
We'll get to the end of the season and we'll see.
Which
we'll
is see just phenomenal.
No, I mean going, going forward.
But if they break even but get relegated, how good is that for them?
Well, that's a problem, isn't it?
Because they won't break even next season because they won't have this $5 million TV money.
There is like a really good point, which is, you know, shouldn't they all be profitable? Rather than upping the salary cap, they should all be sustainable.
Well, I think historically only Exeter and Northampton.
Exeter,
maybe
Northampton,
and
Leicester. Yeah, those are the three. I think there's four though.
Gloucester,
it's not Gloucester.
Quinns. Let's just face it. Quinns yesterday took more in gate receipts than Sale will take in their whole season.
77,000 people.
Yeah, but do they actually make money on that game? So I mean, got to hire the stadium. I think the tickets go rather cheaply.
They are rather cheap, but that's not. I'm just saying in pure volume.
Yeah, maybe
unit numbers.
But you know. Break even. So that's it's an incredible achievement.
If you go down, so halfway through the season, let's say the bottom two are certainly adrift still. Do we think it's going to be one of those two, Bristol or Worcester going down? And if so, which one?
I think it will still be Bristol.
I think it's going to be Worcester. I mean, I think they'd be mad to relegate Worcester because you know, the amount of money they've spent. It is a Premiership side. They shouldn't go down.
Don't give me that shouldn't. Either we have relegation or we don't.
Yeah, and we shouldn't have relegation.
I think
that's a different question.
Yeah, I think we should have relegation. Because London Irish, you could say the same thing about them.
And I do.
But that is a very different question. Yeah. As the rules are now,
as the rules,
someone is getting
will go
relegated.
Down, I think.
I worry for Sale getting dragged into it. I really do.
I do, and we talk about the importance of having good halfbacks and. That was Sale's biggest weakness on the weekend.
And again, you say Sale haven't spent loads of money. They will have invested a fair chunk of money in Mike Phillips.
Yeah.
And he's not...
And AJ McGinty.
Yeah. McGinty wouldn't have come cheap with that season. There'd be other clubs after him, certainly.
I tell you the guy who would make Sale a lot better. Will Cliff.
Let's not talk about Sale now. Jade, stop talking about Sale.
Right, should we get this let's get this quiz, let's get this game going.
Yeah, all right, okay. So we're going to get into the Pro 12 in a little bit and looking ahead to the New Year's games. But Peter Shaw, what a hero Peter Shaw is. He's a listener, he's a physician in America. Now, does that mean a doctor?
Yes, I think. Yeah.
Right. Okay. No, it means he... No, go on.
No, go on. You both got medical... Wives.
No,
you
I was going to tell you that he was a physicist, but I'm not going to get that wrong.
So he's doctor, I think.
He's a doctor in America, and he's come up with a game for us. After hearing Springbok or Nazi war criminal, and after hearing what was the one I did?
Aussie or Australian player or hipster band?
Or hipster band. He's come up with Fijian international rugby player or medical condition. I've got seven, so it's a best of seven. You two going against each other. Play along as you're listening. And here we go. Thank you so much, Peter Shaw. And if you can think of a game and you send it in, you can contact us at Rugby Podcast. You can get email, we'll bob an email address out and whatnot. Then send it to me and I can get Phil and JB playing. So, Fijian player or medical condition. Is this a player who can run with the pill... or something that can make you ill? Vola Vola.
Oh, I know Vola Vola.
I know
Come
Vola
on.
Vola.
Come on.
He's a Waratahs fly half.
Tim Answer. Sorry, Phil Answer.
The answer's on Phil. I was saying, if you're watching on Facebook Live, I thought a bulb had just died.
Yeah.
JB's using the lighting.
Dim the light.
To make it.
Mastermind.
Yeah, there you
go. Phil.
Vola Vola is Fijian international 10 who has also played for the Waratahs.
JB, what are you saying?
It's not really an audio gag.
Search Egg Chasers on Facebook and have a look. This is great.
Vola Vola, I agree with Phil. It is a player.
He is a 13 caps to his name, made his debut in 2015. Next one, medical condition or Fijian player. Is this someone who can dot it down in the corner or send you to the coroner?
Ooh.
Laggy, laggy.
Jay, do you want to go first?
Ooh. Yep, just thought change some colours.
Nice.
I am going to say laggy, laggy is a medical condition.
I also want to go with medical condition. This is going to be boring if we just go for the same. I'm going medical condition.
You're both wrong.
Oh,
Laggy is a prop who got his first. He got one cap in 1991 for Fiji.
That's why I didn't know him.
Okay, next one. Is this someone who kicks for sticks or something that can make you sick? Lower.
Player.
Medical condition.
Lower. Is an African eyeworm parasite that lives in African rivers and can cause blindness.
No, thank you.
2-1 to Phil. So now, Fijian player or medical condition, Moya Moya. Is Moya Moya someone who has offloads to give or an illness that might give you 6 months to live? Moya Moya.
Give me...
Phil, you go first this time.
Disease.
You're both correct.
Yes.
It's a disease in which new blood vessels form in the brain to work around blockages. And on some scans, it looks like a puff of smoke, which is Moya Moya, is a Japanese word for puff of smoke.
Oh, there you go.
That's where that comes from. So, Fijian player or medical condition, Beriberi. Is Beriberi someone who might put up and under, or something that could put you 6 feet under?
Beriberi is a player.
I think he's a player.
You're both wrong.
Oh, wow.
It's 3-2 to Phil still. Beriberi is a vitamin B1 deficiency.
Who knew?
Thiamine deficiency.
Well, Dr. Shaw knew, obviously.
Viri.
That is a player, I'm sure.
Medical condition.
Phil goes 4-2 ahead.
Yes.
Back with two caps, made his debut in 2014, did Viri. And finally, Rocco Barrow.
Go on, Phil.
You've got an unassailable lead as it is. There's no pressure.
Medical condition.
Player.
It is a player. Makes the finish 4-3. Respectable, yes. DB, but you're still a loser. Rocco Barrow was a Fijian back who made his debut in 2013.
Phil wins. Look, it's flashing lights. Woo!
Peter Shaw. Let's say thank you very much, Peter Shaw.
Yep.
Thank you, Peter.
Fantastic game, Peter.
Very good.
And if you can think of a game to play on the podcast... a rugby player of some kind or something else, then yeah, get in touch.
Send it over. And save us a job. Come on.
You can have your moment on the podcast.
Yeah.
So,
Pro 12. Then they've been playing. And,
they have.
JB, I'm gonna hand the floor to you at this point.
Before JB gets into it, can I just briefly mention Ulster's performance against Connacht?
Yeah.
Yes,
on.
You can.
On Friday night, 23-7 win, and
tremendous performance.
It was a good performance. Going back, we seem to only be able to score points against Clermont for some reason.
That's how it usually works.
Yeah, I can't understand that. But it was a good all-round performance because Connacht are a decent side. And the best individual performance for me was McCloskey. Yeah. McCloskey looked...
Oh, he's that boy's a monster. I mean, I don't know for the life of me why he is not the starting 12. I think he's better than Henshaw. I think he's more Henshaw-ish than Henshaw as well.
Well, you could push Henshaw to 13 and have McCloskey at 12. Or
Ringrose, look how good he's looked.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, we can't. Anyway.
Which, again, just linking into Ulster slightly, which, again, because Ireland seem to have some really exciting young centres and lots of them, it makes, bearing in mind Phil's pain at Ulster losing Ruan Pienaar at the end of the season... And he could have had this kind of mentoring role with some of these scrum halves coming through at Ulster. It makes it very questionable why Jaco Tauta for Munster in the centre, bearing in mind they always also have New Zealander Francis Siali, who's going to be coming back to full fitness soon. Jaco Tauta's been given... the Munster have been allowed to keep him till the end of the season.
This is outrageous.
And maybe beyond.
Not only is it outrageous, I mean, it's a weird one, isn't it? I suspect it's something to do with their positions. So if you're a nine or a hooker or a fly half,
you're very definitive.
Explicitly, yeah, that's what you do. If you're a back three player, like Nathewa, maybe you can have an Earl Rose or someone else in there because you'd have more exemptions. Do you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean, but Razzie Erasmus, the Munster head coach, his reasoning trying to get Jaco Tauta to stay on longer with Munster was that he would help bring through Sam Arnold and Niall Scannell.
I've never even heard of the guy, actually.
But you want someone to mentor young scrum halves through, is there anybody better than Ruben Pienaar? I'm sure, and Ruben Pienaar loves Ulster and has talked about how much he loves it so much. I would imagine he would have maybe taken a bit less money knowing he was going to play less games to stay there.
He's already taken less money in the past, so we know that.
He's a very kind of religious man. He thinks of Ulster as his home.
Yep.
Did he meet his wife there?
I'm not sure.
I think he might have met his wife there.
Here's the other thing,
I
forgot what I was going to... Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a very flexible player, Ruan Pienaar. Why didn't they just list him as a fullback?
List him as a fly half.
Yeah.
Because there aren't really any. Yeah, just list him as a fly half.
I mean, he's played international fullback. So it wouldn't
fly
be.
Half.
No, fullback.
Fullback.
Has he played international fullback as well?
Certain of it.
But,
I mean, you need to double check that.
It's just odd. What's interesting is seeing the quotes from the other coaches off the back of this, because the Leinster coach got binned after basically speaking up. Because the Ireland are in charge of the players, they decide where they go. I think. Arnold, the centre, got moved from Ulster to Munster, and he was told, you're moving, so you get more game time.
Yep.
And they decide who the coaches of the provinces are, and the Leinster coach got binned off when he
was that Matt O'Connor?
Matt O'Connor, when he spoke up. And so Leo Cullen's very much like, oh, I'm not the one to ask here, just, we're doing what we're doing, and that's fine. They'll make their decisions. No one can speak up and say anything, but I'd be really upset if I was an Ulster fan.
The other one, the rumour at the moment, is that Ben Smith is talking to Munster, but you've already got Nasewa, Kirchner and Piatau as foreign back three players, or foreign fullbacks specifically.
I'd love to know what these actual rules are. I think it is very
it's close to Gatland's law.
Yeah, I think it's very, very Gatlandy.
Yeah, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Anyway, so Phil and other Ulster fans will be quite upset. Anyway, JB. Yeah. Right, so we've talked about the positive. Ulster's great performance, and Munster had a great win.
No, we've not even
however
come close to the positives. So this for me is the best weekend of Pro 12 rugby. It's
two weekends.
Yeah, it's ridiculously ridiculously good. You've got the derbies, so everything is packed.
Yeah,
I mean, I watched the Munster game. I sat down to watch a game with maybe two of the best sets of fans in the sport, but I mean, they're certainly up there.
Yeah, right up there.
The rivalry is second to none.
Yeah, and the history and the European Cups
history
and the pro and all their titles.
I mean, they've got a ground which is purposely built for this one sport. Nothing could possibly go wrong, except it's the Pro 12, and that Leinster decided that they wouldn't put out their full squad. Now, they have put out a squad which is full of internationals because they're Leinster and they have huge strength in depth. But what does it say about your league when you're right at the top of it against your traditional rival on a weekend where families all flock back to Ireland? I mean, like, you know, my rugby coach, my director of rugby at Talk H went back to Midlands, where he's from, met up with his mates, goes to a game. I suspect people up and down the country do exactly this thing. They all go to Munster, Leinster, and Leinster don't even put out their full team. It's an absolute joke. It's a farce. And you know, I've said it twice already about Ben Taylor. It's disrespectful. I mean, what? They must think so lowly of this competition. Then you've also got the fact that there's another derby going on across the way, which is the derby between Cardiff Blues and Newport.
Yeah.
Now, I'll give you a small clue. Okay, I'll give you a small clue. Cardiff Blues play in blue. Newport showed up at Cardiff Blues all in blue. I mean, I know kit clashes happen, but surely to God, you've seen this on, you know, this isn't a surprise that, you know, they're called the Cardiff Blues and you come in a full blue outfit. It was unwatchable. It was simply unwatchable. And this is the problem, really. Maybe the Pro 12 should not be run by the unions and should not be held to ransom by the unions. This should have been the single best... Scrum, dog's here.
Sorry.
Scrum, get out.
Rudy's upset about the Pro 12. What do you want to say, Rudy? Yeah.
Exactly.
He hated the selection from Leinster.
This should have been their best weekend. And it happened with the Welsh derbies earlier on in the year. Wales decided, well, we might release the internationals, we might not release the internationals. So the games that matter, which should be driving the competition, it could be a very good competition. It's got some of the best teams in the world in this in this competition. Yeah, the administration is appalling.
I do. It frustrated me no end to see that Leinster lineup, because as the other thing, we all know player welfare is paramount, and you've got to rest your players. But
Munster didn't.
The Pro 12.
Well, let's see what Munster do in their away game. The
Pro 12 have more opportunities to rest their players than any other because you've got Dragons, you've got Zebra, you've got Treviso.
Yeah.
So why pick this game?
Derby weekend. The derbies this weekend.
Yeah.
It's a farce. It's an embarrassment, actually. And the worst thing are the people on Twitter who somehow try and defend this. I mean, had one clown, you can find him, at Mr. Clown. He decided, right, the line of argument to take against me was, oh, you think it's a big rivalry, do you? Yeah, it's the biggest. It's probably the biggest rivalry in all of rugby.
It's up there in terms of club rivalries.
Yeah,
right up there.
And
yeah.
Then this same clown decided to say, oh, well, they're doing okay, aren't they? Well, they were up till half time, but they weren't far off. I mean, at one point, they were heading to their biggest ever defeat to Leinster.
Just to highlight this one, so I know that in the case of returning England internationals, depending on how much they played in the autumn, so Chris Robshaw played every game, and he has to be rested in one of these three weekends, including the one just gone, New Year's and the first weekend in January. So he was out injured, so that means he can play the next two. So if the IRFU have the same kind of deal, then all the Irish international players will have to miss one of the games. They have their two big rivalries. Leinster, were away to Munster. They're home to Ulster on Saturday. And then Leinster's next game after that, home to Zebre.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So if you want to rest your players...
Yeah.
And people cry, oh, the whinging is unbelievable. Oh, Cronin had twins. Oh, shut up. You know, they didn't all have twins. You know, they weren't all at the... you know, the hospital bed of their wife. And this is the... I'll say it one more time. This is a top-of-the-table clash.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, it wasn't, you know, just a derby. It was one that actually meant something, and they ruined it.
Do you know who Leinster's next three games? So after these two big Irish derby matches...
Go on.
Munster away and Ulster at home, they have Zebre at home, as I mentioned.
Mm.
They then have Treviso away... Then Edinburgh at home.
Yep.
Leinster's game.
Do any of those coincide with the Six Nations, though? So do they have to rest them before then?
Yeah, well, no.
Well,
Ireland going to camp on Monday, apparently.
Zebre's before that.
Yeah, the two Irish teams are the first two weekends in...
Right.
No. The other ones are in February.
February.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, point stands. So I agree, JB. It like for all the times, Pro 12 fans rightly want to shout and say, don't call our league a hobby league and all the rest of it. Yeah. They just shoot themselves in the foot.
And the worst type of person is the person goes, oh, it's boring though. It's boring you going on about the Pro 12. Well, it's not as boring, is it, as sitting down in front of your TV, waiting to see these derbies, waiting to see the pinnacle of Celtic rugby and them just deciding not to show up or to get the kits wrong or for Glasgow to rest their players against Edinburgh. It's just not on. It's not on.
Interesting matchups for the 31st. Poor Scottish sides going to Italy.
good New Year's party.
Good New Year's party afterwards, yeah.
Yeah.
And 11 o'clock in the morning because of the time difference. Zebre, Edinburgh.
That's
getting
weird,
things underway on Saturday. Weird.
It'll be a heavy session after that one, I imagine.
Big time.
There are some rumours about Zebre either folding or being moved to Rome.
Ooh.
In the paper recently.
Well, I tell you what, I tell you a result which happened this weekend, which you won't know about, but I'll tell you anyway. RGC beat Merthyr.
I saw it.
Now, you might laugh.
Yeah.
But...
just giggling that JB's contribution is having a pop at Pro 12,
sale,
RGC.
Yeah, so that means RGC are one point off the Premiership in Wales. So one point from the summit. So... if Zebre do fold, or if someone does fold, it strikes me as the next logical step to have RGC as the fifth region.
Wales is struggling to support four regions at the moment.
Yeah. And let's talk about it if that happens.
Well, hear me now, believe me later. It will be happening.
So, fixtures for next week.
Yes.
You got them there, Tim.
At Rugby Podcast, if you want to have a fan of the Pro 12 side and you want to defend it and think we've got it wrong, because... Phil and I have actually been trying to kind of defend it, and they have they've played completely into the hobby league tag, unfortunately.
Yeah, just one last thing. I want to say something positive. Two players who were outstanding, regardless of the competition, because the Leinster players that did play were very, very good. They played with a lot of heart. They just shouldn't have been playing. What's his name? Murray is just outstanding. He is head and shoulders the best scrum half in the British Isles.
Conor Murray.
At the moment. Oh,
yeah.
He's just fantastic. He's awesome.
Yeah.
Munster, tell me if you disagree with this. Munster sort of play like Exeter. They're like a little bit of a... I'm not sure if they're a better version or a worse version, but when they were in the 22, it is one up, one up, one up. Very, very pragmatic. Very, very belligerent. And it strikes me as their only player who's got actual... Maybe not their only player, but the player that gives them the real edge is Zeebo. And
Zeebo in the backs, Stander in the forwards.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guilty of thinking that Zeebo was nothing much more than just a pretty fast runner.
No,
and he's so much more than that.
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes he does get a bit headless, but I thought he had a phenomenal game.
His form has been outstanding recently.
Yeah,
and playing 15, playing on the wing.
Lions,
yeah,
starter,
maybe.
He's got to be in the conversation.
He's not far off. He's not far off at all. Oh, he'll definitely be travelling. Definitely.
Yeah.
Do you want to do Pro 12 fixtures first off?
Go for it.
Yeah.
And we have no games on Friday. So Saturday 31st, Zeebo, Edinburgh. Yeah. Treviso, Glasgow.
Okay. Yeah.
Then Leinster, Ulster. Tasty game. Dublin v Belfast.
I don't like that Leinster have rested
Not their... Dublin, I know it's the provinces, but you know what
I
mean.
Yeah. I don't like that Leinster have rested all their players, so they'll be fit and fresh. So I think Leinster are going to edge this.
Yeah, what makes you think that Leinster will play all their senior players? I mean, they can't really do it. They can't do it against Munster.
They can't rest every player every time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Leinster, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think so as well. Connacht at home to Munster is the game. So 3 o'clock kickoff is the Leinster Ulster game if you're interested in watching. Because I'm working New Year's Day, I'm not having a big one New Year's Eve.
Professional.
So I'm going to be sat in and watching rugby. So Connacht Munster at 5:30 on the West Coast. West Coast matchup.
Give me Munster.
Yeah,
their form recently.
No, I'm not going to go down this road. Yeah, I'd say Munster as well.
And then on the Sunday,
New Year's Day games, you got Scarlets v Blues and Dragons v Ospreys.
Ospreys and Scarlets for me.
Ospreys Scarlets, this will be watchable because they'll be wearing different kits. Unless...
Well, no, because Cardiff have got that pink kit, haven't they? So they turn up to the Scarlets in their pink kit.
I wonder if the Scarlets wear their blue kit.
Or maybe. Yeah, they have got a blue kit. Yeah, what? Cardiff in their blue and Scarlets in their blue.
I went to Canterbury...
And Dragons and Ospreys can both wear black, can't they?
I'm just going to take a sip of my drink, actually.
So...
Lovely Canterbury mug. You took a trip to Canterbury and...
Yes, I went to Canterbury, and I'm going to push for this because it has to happen, right? Teams can only have one colour away kit, and it's going to be white.
Like,
it just
like
has
NFL.
To be white, right? And you
but
can...
which teams would be affected by having a white home kit? There would be Ospreys. The traditional old Swansea kit would have been white.
White, yeah. Well, they're basically... So instead of getting all these stupid colours, I mean, Scarlets look like something from Tron. When they're in the blue kit.
Oh, yeah, and they had that Tequila Sunrise kit last year.
Enough of that now. Every team has to have a plain white kit. White kit, black shorts, whatever it is.
Okay? Your old favourite club, Exeter, have been doing that for years.
Fine.
Black kit and a change white kit.
Yeah, and that will be that. And you only go into your change kit when there is a clash. Not because there's a minimum amount of... You know, times you need to wear it, not because it's a European game. You've got two kits, and never will there be a kit clash ever again. And we can all watch rugby, knowing that we'll never see an abomination like Newport Gwent Dragons in blue playing the Cardiff Blues.
And for people that are just being welcomed into the game and to go, where is this game? What's going on? Where is it? Oh, they're playing in white. They're the away team. Right, got it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and also if you're the home team. No, if you're the home team, you should change. Because, you know, the logic is... No, actually, it's a professional sport. Sort it out ahead of time.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Avicii Premiership, we have got games spread over several days again. Friday the 30th, Newcastle versus Wasps. Newcastle, in terms of this season's Avicii Premiership, we were talking about everything at the top. They've been the kind of surprise package, really. Five victories in the first half of the season is a great return for them, and they are developing nicely. But how will they match up against Wasps coming to town?
I think they'll score points.
But Wasps on a plastic pitch. Give me Wasps.
Yeah, good point. There'll be lots of points here.
Yeah, it could be good. As long as the weather's good, it should be a nice game.
Give me Pablo Sacchino with at least one try.
Wow. Give me Wasps by 10 points.
Yeah, Wasps, I think, will win by more than seven. Then on New Year's Eve, 3 o'clock kickoff, the only game on Saturday, Bath Exeter.
This will be a great game.
If they're right, Jay.
Yeah, fine.
Just made a funny noise then.
Oh, did it? No, I'm just putting the Avicii music on.
Oh, okay.
Obvs.
Yeah, go Obvs. On. Avicii Premiership. Bath Exeter. Bath. Oh, wait, right, by the way, what are Exeter doing travelling to Leicester?
Yeah.
And Bath going to Wasps on Christmas Eve. Well, surely there's, and like, that Exeter to Leicester.
Newcastle to Saracens.
Newcastle to Saracens. Yep. Weird. Yeah. What are
they doing? Well, no, Newcastle to Saracens actually works really well because the airports. I mean, if you're going to...
If you can afford to fly.
Oh, for the fans?
For the fans.
Oh, yeah, never thought of that. Yeah. Yeah. That's how I do. Yeah.
So, but Bath Exeter, this will be an interesting one. A resurgent Exeter, an excellent Bath, who are needing to kind of re-establish themselves now. They've had that defeat against Wasps. Todd Blackadder was very upbeat after the game, said we thought we played well. Wasps were just good on the day. He didn't seem overly concerned.
No, he mentioned the clinical edge of Wasps, well, didn't he? Give me Bath at home. They've already beaten Saracens at home, and they are a better team. I think they'll do it.
Bath versus Exeter? I think Exeter.
Exeter on the road.
Yeah, I do. I think they'll squeeze the life out of them. They'll just do what Exeter do. They play. Do you know what? They do their individual jobs better than almost anyone.
I'm going in.
So Exeter.
Bath at home. Then on to Sunday, and we have four games in the Avicii. Sale versus Bristol. Bristol come away with a win at the AJ Bell Stadium, and it is game on.
It really is.
Do you know what the worrying thing is? Bristol are very good at chasing bonus points. I mean, if you look at their bonus point, I mean, they've already got more bonus points than
losing bonus points.
Yeah, but I mean, you've still got to score the four tries. I mean,
or losing bonus points.
They just haven't lost by a lot in a lot of the games. Yeah. And what's important now is they've got a win in that column with a man down. Two wins in Europe before that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, arguably, Bristol have used whereas Worcester used the European weeks to just rest all their guys, Bristol used it to make winning a habit. And can they go to the AJ Bell Stadium?
I think they can. I think they can. But will they?
Is this the first time you're going to bet against Sale this season?
Yeah, I think... you know, the one thing... A lot of things impress me about Bristol. Not least the heart... Of that performance, but they're also quite a powerful ball carrying side.
Yeah.
And if Varndell gets on the outside of anyone, there's tries. I think Hurrell is a very good player. I think Will Clifford's a pretty good player. So
who are you going to say?
I'm going to say it's going to be.
You can't do it. You can't go against your beloved Sale.
I'll do it then. I'm calling Sale. They'll have Josh Beaumont back in the side. Yeah.
Josh Beaumont's inside this week, mate.
No, he came off the bench.
Came off the bench. A bit of an ankle strain.
He'll be starting again, I think. I think Sale up front will win.
Do you really think he's that much better than, say, TJ Ioane, who's been playing out of
his
skin?
No, but I think he is much, much better than Andre Ostrikov, for example. So I think they'll
get an extra better player on
the
pitch.
I think they might rejig things and
Ostrikov's a pretty good player, actually.
Yeah.
He's big and athletic, but he's not
good second rower.
He does some odd things.
Yeah.
So I'm going Sale
at home
in an ugly game.
Yeah, Sale at home won't be pretty.
Kicks will win it. Gloucester versus Northampton. Again, I don't think this will be pretty either.
No.
I think Gloucester will win.
Gloucester at home.
Gloucester will do some magnificent things and then do some mind-numbingly stupid things.
Yeah.
Give me Gloucester.
David Humphreys described the game against Harlequins this game and the next week as season-defining, and I don't think that's over-exaggerating at all. That they're... If they got any chance of top six, which, you know, if some of those players and some of those coaches still want to be there part of the Altrad regime, then I think possibly they need to be top six. But I think Gloucester will win at home. Leicester versus Saracens. Again, this is a tasty game. This is at Welford Road, when Leicester will turn up.
And it'll be packed out Welford Road.
Yeah.
I find it so difficult to look past Saracens, though. And Leicester, they've been decent.
Leicester,
Welford Road.
My theory about Leicester being a French team is going to come true. They're going to win this.
Win at home.
Yeah, win at home.
I'm working this one. I'm really excited about it.
Saracens beat French teams in France. They beat Toulon earlier in the season in Toulon.
They're pretty good at doing this, aren't they?
Yeah. Give me Saracens.
Give me Saracens, yeah.
Saracens. And Worcester Quins, again, you could conceivably see Bristol and Worcester both winning this potentially this weekend coming. And that leaves it like a 4 or 6 point between three sides at the bottom.
Particularly if Quins have to rest Marler and Mike Brown. I think that's massive for them. Marler, Mike Brown and Danny Kerr, potentially. If that happens, give me Worcester. If those boys and Rob Shaw are playing, give me Quins.
Worcester a little bit rudderless. And with Shilcock failing an HIA, he will be stood down automatically, I think.
He should be, yeah.
For 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So again, what do they do at 10? Such an important position, as we've been
Ryan
talking
Lamb.
About. I'm going to go Quins away. I know Worcester look a different team at six ways, but there seems to be some big fractures in that side. So
yeah, and that Quinn's back line, having Marchant and Visser and Yard and Brown and Kerr playing on a plastic pitch. give me Quins if those boys are playing.
Good times ahead.
Excellent.
Good pod.
Excellent pod, boys. And it's petty, I know. But just remember, we're the only podcast who have stuck to our weekly commitments to our listeners over the festive period. Just saying.
Well, no, I think it's the same all through the summer. Lots of people take summers off. We're there. We're there off season. We're there Christmas week. We never stop because that's how much we love the game.
And until April. We're not sure what's going to happen in April.
There might be a couple of blank weeks, but we're working on it.
No, so we've got 4 months lead knowing that we've all got holidays in April, and we're going to come up with something incredible. So don't worry about that. But no, that's our commitment to the game right here.
Committed to the game. Just like this wonderful Canterbury mug.
Delicious.
Delicious Canterbury.
I've got my Canterbury book I'm going to read. Got it for Christmas. The only thing that I wanted. Canterbury brand book.
Other kit manufacturers are available. But thank you very much for listening. Leave a review on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes and Acast, and you'll get the next episode. I presume we'll probably do this one maybe on the Monday.
Monday's good for me.
Bank holiday Monday.
Monday, we're in.
So we'll have it there for you returning
Tuesday
to work.
Tuesday commute.
Those Tuesday the 2nd of January blues, when you have to go back and get back on the grind and stop eating cheese for a living.
And stop drinking whiskey every single day. Whiskey and wine every single day.
I've been whiskeying up loads of coffees as well. And Kate's had the liqueurs and stuff about. She's been knocking a bit of amaretto into
really?
Her coffee. Just like standing.
And you both like.
Do you want a brew? Do you want something in that?
Do you want a tap in your nose? Do you want a brew?
Do you want a brew? I need to stop.
No
that.
Straight liquor in front of the kids, Tim. Put in the coffee, Kate.
Right, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We'll see you next time. Top work, Phil.
Thank you, Tim.
Nice one, JB.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.